This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listening to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 226, a nerdy crypt discussion, the Tim Burton theory. Welcome to the Animation Addicts podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place on the cobweb to get your animation fix from animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation, spooky and otherwise, featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between, from cackling nerdy discussions and movie reviews to interrogations of industry insiders. This show's mission is to send chills down your spine through our obsession of animation. So lay back in your casket, have Thing grab you something from the cauldron, and get ready to hang out with these animation crypt keepers, because it is time to unearth today's episode.
Hey there, Animation Addicts. I'm Morgan Stradling.
And I'm Chelsea Robson.
And we are excited to be here. We are the Roto Spookers. It is Halloween month. And so we're here for a nerdy couch discussion. We're going to talk about something a little spooky. But before we do, we are having a really fun episode today, because what we're going to be doing, we are going to be bringing on the patrons of the Animation Addicts podcast. One of the perks of being a patron, you get to hang out with us. We have special patron-only podcasts that we do just for the patrons. People come on, we hang out, we shoot the breeze. It's so much fun. And it really is a community where we know each other, and it's awesome. But for this episode specifically, the patrons are going to come on and join us on the Nerdy Couch. So before we get started with the topic of this, let's bring on the first patron who's here today, Esther. Hey, Esther.
Shalom.
Whoop, whoop.
I waited a long time to do that.
I love it. Let people know a little bit about you, who you are, where you're from.
Let's see. I am originally from the Midwest, and I went off to live in New York for about 10 to 12 years. And that was amazing because I got to go to comic conventions and some special animated previews at different movies. And then I kind of moved down to Maryland, and that's where I am now. I help manage an alumni database for university. It doesn't sound very glamorous, but it's fine. It pays the bills. And I've been a huge animation fan since I was a teeny little kid watching, I think, The Lady and the Tramp was one of my first movies ever.
Ooh, I love it. I love that movie. I know we just recently did it, or we've done it, but every time I rewatch it, I'm like, oh, it's so good. So good. So
it's very homey.
What is your favorite animated film of all time?
Oh, gosh. It is. That's so hard to assume. That's like sending me to the chocolate factory and saying, pick one thing. I would have to say it's honestly a tie between The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast. I know everyone says them all the time, but just everything works. Not just the quality of the animation, but the storytelling and the music and the characters. It's Disney at its best.
The nostalgia. Yes.
All of
it
the
all
things.
Wraps in.
Mm-hmm. So today's going to be a really fun episode because since it is the month of All Hallows Eve, we decided that we are going to be doing a nerdy couch discussion on a theory that has been around for quite a while. You know, people have been talking about this for 7-8 years, but I saw it, you know, come up on Instagram and I'm like, you know what? I sent it over to Chelsea and said, hey, let's talk about it. You know, why not? So Chelsea, kick us off. What is this theory that we're going to be discussing today?
All right. So there is a theory that the movies Frankenweenie, The Corpse Bride, and Nightmare Before Christmas are all about the same man and his dog. First when he was a kid, and then when he's an adult, and then in the afterlife. And when you line up the pictures, like still pictures from each film, you can see that they look very similar, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the one that I would say is like less connected would probably be Nightmare Before Christmas if you're looking mm-hmm. at just, you know, voice actors for one, but also like skeletal shape and everything. But the dog looks very much like it could be the same dog.
Yeah. So with this theory, these are all by Tim Burton. And so, you know, there's all these little things with any of these theories. People love to cherry pick little things here and there. And they're like, oh, there's this. And so therefore it proves X, Y, and Z, you know? And so people are thinking, oh, because it's Tim Burton, he secretly has interconnected all of his movies. And there are a lot of similarities. So let's first talk about the different similarities between these movies. One, they're all stop motion animated films. And they all have this very Tim Burton-esque style. If you've ever looked at concept art for different films, you know, Tim Burton, he worked for Disney in the 80s. He has a very, very distinct style. You see it in his character designs, you know, with Corpse Bride being the exception. I'm not sure how involved he was with, you know, if he was the producer, but I don't know if he was involved in character design, but obviously very much influenced by him because these all look like Tim Burton stuff, right? And so that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why people initially bring this theory up is because the characters, specifically Victor in Frankenweenie and Victor in Corpse Bride, it seems obvious. Victor is young in Frankenweenie, and it just looks like an aged up version in mm-hmm. of Victor in Corpse Bride, right? And then there's obviously
and isn't it the
Jack.
Same voice actor?
Is it Johnny Depp?
Johnny Depp is in Frankenweenie as well.
So.
I see that as a possibility. The only thing that is different is the Nightmare Before Christmas.
They have the dogs, right? They all have the dogs that are very similar. They have a very pointed snout that,
right.
Therefore, they're the same dog. Right. They're the same guy. Now, go ahead, Esther.
I was going to say, so if you've talked before about, I think, a time vortex and the Disney verse, is this the Burton verse then?
Yes. The time vortex in the Burton verse, right? Exactly.
So
that is a throwback. That's how you know Esther is one of our OG listeners.
Yes.
That's from episode 1.
Really? That far back? I don't remember.
Yes. Okay. Oh, it's so good. Well, we always brought it up. The time vortex. It's the answer to everything. And when it comes to Disney theories, Pixar theories, or Burton theories, a time vortex solves all of your problems. It's just the magic key that connects it all together. So I think we're going to talk about, let's talk about how this possibly could happen and why. And then on the flip side, someone will play devil's advocate and break it all down, because I think that's what a lot of people like to do with these is, okay, nice try. But so what they're saying happened is that Frankenweenie came out in 2012, Corpse Bride, 2005. Nightmare Before Christmas, 1993. They're saying that Victor in Frankenweenie had this dog. You know, obviously the dog died. He had to bring it back. He grew up, and through some weird sort of shifting of time, because Frankenweenie is kind of set in the 1950s. You know, they're wearing 3D glasses at one point and watching movies. It's very much an homage to those sorts of the films from that era. Then we hop back to the Victorian period. And he's grown up and he has a dog. It's the same dog. It has a different name. But then when he dies, he kind of becomes Jack. He renames himself, becomes a new guy, and becomes Jack the Pumpkin King with his dog Zero. So You know, there's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through to kind of make this timeline work. And that's kind of where it falls back apart, because you have to kind of jump backwards in time. And typically theories don't do that, right?
So Frankenweenie and Corpse Bride were both directed by Tim Burton, but it was actually Nightmare Before Christmas that was done by Henry Selick. And so it does make a lot more sense that Frankenweenie and Corpse Bride would be connected, and why it's much more of a shift and a jump to go straight to Nightmare Before Christmas. Not to mention the fact that I feel like they would have gotten me if Johnny Depp had been the voice for Jack, but mm-hmm. because he wasn't, it's kind of like, I don't see that, but I can see the other two.
So Esther, what do you think? Do you think does the voice actor matter in this theory?
Oh, the short answer is definitely yes. And the long answer, you have some good points. I would say, yeah, Frankenweenie and Corpse Bride, it makes sense of being in the same timeline, because it could be in a somewhat human realistic world, just mm-hmm. in different time periods, the 50s and the Victorian era. Whereas The Night Before Christmas seems to take place mostly in a different magical world. Halloween Town is not in our world. He seems to temporarily go to the human world when Jack Skellington is dropping off the presents, but not as much. I mean, for the sake of fun, I would say, why not make them the same person? Right. I have two theories, though, I could share with you.
Yeah.
So one was a YouTube channel talking about mythology and, you know, what do vampires symbolically represent in our society, or ghosts? And this one gentleman said the ghost represents our untold stories. If you have suppressed feelings, or people feel that they've let someone down, or they're embarrassed, then the ghost turns up to, say, haunt them because their story is not complete. But once the, mm-hmm. you know, we find out what the real story is, then the ghost is satisfied. They can be at peace and move on. I mean, automatically, what popped into my head was Emily from The Corpse Bride. She's a corpse, not a ghost, but the point is she can't have any peace. She's still mm-hmm. drifting mm-hmm. around. She's still trapped mm-hmm. in the underworld. But once they conclude her story, she's able to depart and go into, I guess, another world or heaven, whatever you call it there. So maybe the same character is also not at peace. So he's hopping from one story to another because he has to complete something with his dog. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe mm-hmm. he and his dog committed a crime in their past life, or they have to complete their story before they get somewhere. My other theory is perhaps they're being chased through time and space by some evil demon. And that's why they have to keep reinventing themselves over and over again.
I like it.
It's kind of like, in California, like up in like the Fremont, Palo Alto area, they have the Westminster House. The widow of the guy who created the Winchester rifle. So you have the Winchester House, and she kind of went crazy in her old years, and she had more money than anybody else in the world. Basically, she was super rich, and somebody told her that. These spirits were coming after her, and the only way to keep the spirits away would be to never finish building your house. And so if you go and look up the Winchester Mystery House, you can go in and see it's got like a staircase to nowhere. It's got a door that opens to nothing. It's got all these rooms that were never finished or that kind of go into one, a cupboard that's not really a cupboard. Like, it's just weird things. Mm-hmm. And she did this in order to confuse the spirits. So. Interesting.
Yeah, you think about different cultures. They all have their way to either appease the spirits or make sure that they don't cross your threshold. So they will deliberately clean out the house or leave things as they are. Or people will leave talismans somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm Jewish. So in our culture, you don't leave water uncovered overnight. If you have a bowl or pitcher of water and you walk into your kitchen, always pour it out. There's this belief uh-huh. that there are demons in the water. So don't drink it.
Interesting.
Also, just from, I guess, a health perspective, there might be a fly in that or something. You never know it got into the water, so just better pour it out. You can get yourself a clean glass of water.
Yeah. We don't want any stale, stagnant water. Mm-hmm. You're better than that, right?
I am too good for that.
Going back to the theory, we didn't talk about some of the other characters that were involved. So we have Victoria, who in Frankenweenie, who he's supposed to marry, right? But then there's also Emily, the corpse bride. So people, you know, he's kind of in this like love triangle in Corpse Bride. It's pretty interesting. But people say that, I think it's Victoria, because there's unfounded issues that happen there. Is it Victoria or is it Emily? I'm getting mixed up, but one of them becomes Sally in this theory. and that's why they ultimately get back together. Who is it? But yeah.
So, Emily was the Corpse Bride. She was the one who was murdered and has a stitched up face and everything.
Right. But I'm trying to say, in this theory, who becomes Sally? Does Emily become Sally or does Victoria become
Helena
Sally?
Helena Bonham Carter is the Corpse Bride voice.
I'm not going by voices. For me, I don't think the voices have anything to do with this theory. But yeah, it's interesting. Okay. I think it's really funny. I think it's one of these things when you first see it, you know, and you see there's a picture that kind of goes around on these memes. It has all three. It says, oh, when you realize it's all just one big movie. And I think it's just like easy clickbait. People are like, oh, mind blown. And you know, it's just like
mind blown emoji, emoji.
It's just popcorn fodder just to kind of like, oh, whoa, that's so cool, man. But once you kind of go one layer deep, you realize, I don't know, I don't think these are in the same universe. What do you think? If you had to say yes or no?
I would say that's one big fan fiction challenge. And yes, someone out there would accept, and I would once I'm done with what I'm currently working on, I would say. Again, I mean, they all take place in a similar environment. So I'm not just in playing devil's advocate. I will say, why not? If you can make it make some sense. Look, they kind of screwed up the Star Wars sequels. That didn't make sense. So I think that at this point, fans could do a little better making things work together.
You just opened up a can of worms.
Oh, and here they crawl over the place. Hello, little worms. Oh, they're all crawling on the floor now.
We're in Corpse Bride. And Frank and Weenie, I guess they all go together. No, I think that I could see definitely Frankenweenie and Corpse Bride being in the same, like I mentioned before, just because it seems a lot more. I feel like Tim Burton likes to do the same things over, and maybe he was thinking that they were the same person. So that would be my assumption.
I think the reason this just happened is he has a very, very, very specific drawing style and doesn't deviate. You know, he has these big eyes, you know, they usually have a ring of eyeliner around them, whether they are male or female, you know, very pointed nose, angular faces, and long, long bodies that just go for days.
Right. Mm-hmm. Question in the house. I'm just curious. I mean, it may all come from Tim Burton's own mind, but I have a question. Do you think it may have also evolved from some of the look from the 90s, the goth punk look, where you said the heavy eyeliner and the pale face, maybe? You think that's something to do with it?
Yeah. I mean, it feels like it was part of that trend.
I don't know. When you go back and you look at his stuff from the 80s, he's just always been this way. He was the trendsetter. Maybe it was he that started the goth punk of the 90s. It was really from Burton himself.
Yeah. Well, I have time for ask you two a question, though?
Yeah, go for it.
My question for you is, what is a good animated film for Halloween that you think is just scary enough? And what do you think is too scary? I'd like to hear your answers, and then I have to share mine.
So this is interesting because I have kids that are 5, 3, and obviously 9 months. And so I'm thinking like, oh, what movies can I introduce them to? And there's specific ones that I think are too scary. One of the ones that I think is just like a perfect Halloween film, or like it really just fits this season, is Coraline. I think maybe for though that age, 5, it might still be a little too scary. Although I was watching the other day and someone was, you know, their 2-year-old was watching it. So I was like, but I think it's just, it has the perfect amount of creepiness. It's weird. It's super unique. Creepy. Yeah. It's not ghosts or, you know, things like that, but it totally fits into this Halloween vibe. So I say that's like the perfect one that's scary, but not too scary, because the whole mother with the buttons in the eyes, and once they go down there, it's just, oh, so weird and creepy.
I would say Corpse Bride is probably a better bet for your kids. Because I wouldn't say that that's scary. It just has that vibe. Frankenweenie, it's been a while since I saw that one, but that probably falls into the same category. And then you also have, I personally would put Coraline as a lot higher on this creepo list, just because it's like, there's just different parts where the other mother just really freaks me out.
She's terrifying.
She really is. And I do remember, even though I like the movie Ichabod Crane, I feel like that one, The Headless Horseman, is like, for Morgan's kids, would probably still be...
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How did they react?
They liked it. They were a little bored, you know, with leading up to it. But with the Headless Horseman part, they were a little scared.
Right.
So
that's what I would assume.
But they still like, watched. Of course, they were like, eyes open. Like, I don't like this. You know? Look away.
Look away.
But there's a car wreck and I'm driving by it.
I know. I think that I just remember being scared as a little kid from that movie, the moment the Headless Horseman came around. So, but I just,
I can't think of one that's like so scary it's over the line. Do you have one, Esther?
Oh, I need to think about that. I will start by saying Coraline, well, I watched it as an adult, not a kid. So as an adult, I thought, yeah, the other mother is terrifying. But didn't disturb me too much. But I have my concerns. It might be a little too much for kids. I just think they might be scared. They might think, oh, God, I'm going to walk into the kitchen. Mom's going to turn that horrible giant stretchy monster now.
Oh, God. Maybe it's,
I remember there were some cute Mickey Mouse cartoons. There were Halloween ones. Maybe starting to get little kids off with that. It just depends on the kid, what they can handle. I mean, yeah, Ichabod and Mr. Crane, that freaked me out. I have to admit, there are two things that I think... One really did scare me as a kid, and that was, in fact, the All Dogs Go to Heaven, because I remember Charlie comes back, but he has these nightmares. I think the idea is that he had a chance to go to heaven. He blew it. He comes back, so he may go to hell because he has these nightmares that demons are coming after him. I was so little.
Good old zombies.
Those freakish monsters are tearing at him. It's like looks like he's gonna be drowned in this fiery pit of lava. I was thinking as a kid, I thought this was to make me happy. I'm terrified by this. Also, the other one was from The Great Mouse Detective. It just popped into my mind. Radican is mostly under control, but at the end they have the clock tower chase and he's running and you see him, his clothes are being shed. He just the monster in him comes out. He's just a rat, but he looks terrifying.
He becomes rabid.
I think it would just, it depends on the child. Maybe depends on the parent. Some kids can take a lot and others are like, no, I just see, they can see even just Casper. They're terrified.
Right. It's interesting. None of us mentioned The Nightmare Before Christmas. And I know we've gotten a lot of flack for this, maybe not a lot. I mean, whatever. Chelsea, myself, and Mason, you know, when we did this episode a long time ago, we were unanimous, like, not a fan. I don't know what it is about Nightmare Before Christmas that I'm just like, meh. Like, I watch it and like, I like the songs and I like the idea of it. When I sit down and watch it, it just doesn't get me. I don't know what it is about it. So it's just kind of interesting that we didn't even talk about it.
Well, could it be perhaps Jack Skellington, his character arc? He just seems to, he makes a mess of things and then just, oh, gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Santa Claus. And Santa's has to fix it. He doesn't have to make a hero sacrifice or give up anything or change. Maybe that's part of it.
It has elements that you think it would work and it would be great. And it is beloved. So I understand. I'm not saying my opinion is gold. Everyone has their own ideas, but something about it, the songs are great. Animation is great. But when it all comes together, the plot, I think Jack's character is one of the big parts of it. His arc just doesn't do it for me.
Well, think about the moral of the story. It's don't break out of anything. Stay in your lane. Just keep doing the same thing over and over again. No matter how tired you are of it, you will suck at anything else. And, you know, you work in business, right? People are told, don't do that. Get creative. Take chances. Expand outside the box. And You may not do everything right the first time, but you have to keep trying until you do it.
Yes, I never considered that.
No, yeah, that's exactly. I've gotten really into watching. There's a YouTube channel that I found, and she's really good at explaining a lot more of the hero's journey and the three act structure. And I thought I knew a lot about it, but then when she like went in and was like, "Oh no, this is like, oh, like there was a lot of pieces that just kind of got put into place for me." And one of those is the fact that every main character has to start out with a misbelief, which is the direct opposite of what the moral or the theme of the story is, which never changes. So it's actually, so Jack Skellington, his misbelief is that I can go outside of my lane. And then, so you're saying mm-hmm, the theme mm-hmm. is no, you can't.
So inspiring.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Stay in your lane.
You're exactly right. And that's probably what goes across.
Then why does everyone love it?
I don't know.
If that's the case. If there's like this fatal flaw that clearly we have discovered with The Nightmare Before Christmas.
I mean, Esther discovered this for us and I just was like, confirmed it. But yeah. I don't know. And I think the characters just the character design, and it's definitely a plot driven story and not a character driven story. And maybe they just like, I mean, people who just really like that type of style. And so mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. why they like it. And it's visually appealing.
It's dark. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's different. There's a lot of elements.
And visually, it is cool.
Make it really good. Yeah.
I'm always drawn mostly to story, and now that you've put in line exactly what the fatal flaw of this is, like, no, mm-hmm, you stay mm-hmm. in your lane. Like, oh wow, yeah.
Yeah, always go back to read Joseph Campbell, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. Yeah. I mean, it's not an easy book to read, but he mentions people have been telling the same stories for thousands of years, and there's a reason why certain stories work. They have a structure, and we understand them as human beings, as individuals going through our lives. I mean, if that is a hard book to get, another one I recommend is The Writer's Journey by Christopher Vogler, which I'm sure you can mm-hmm. get on Amazon.
Rotoscopers.com/Amazon.
Right. Because he does the same thing. He's breaking up the hero's journey and he mentions different movies, including The Lion King. He talks a lot about that, but he explains most of the time you have a flawed character and what do they have to learn? They want one thing, but they need something else. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Jack does learn. I mean, he does learn some lesson that, for example, it's not good to take over someone else's, you know, their story. He's obviously not Santa Claus, but maybe they could find a way of, yeah, just not going back to the same person you were. The point of the hero's journey is to come to be a better version of yourself, mm-hmm. someone wiser mm-hmm. and kinder. And maybe, I don't know. And then you have Victor from Corpse Bride. I think in him also, he has that insecurity in him at the beginning and he overcomes that at the end.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a little more mm-hmm. satisfying. And also he helps Emily. She's like, she's the one who needs help. Mm-hmm. And he saves her.
Ooh. So if you were to watch, if you guys are going to watch one movie before Halloween, what would you watch? Animated. Or of these three, of the three we discussed, which one are you going to go back and watch?
Corpse Bride for me.
Esther?
Corpse Bride for me too. I love a Victorian romance every
time. You
know
what? I am with you. As we were talking about it, I'm like, man, it's been a while since I've seen Corpse Bride. Frankenweenie, I don't know what it is about Frankenweenie. I saw it and I was good. Mm-hmm. It's just not super engaging. And then you know how I feel about Nightmare Before Christmas. I'll go back and watch it if I need to, but yeah. So speaking of going back and watching movies, one of the things that we do with our patrons from time to time is we have watch parties. And in November, we are going to be doing a watch party with all of our patrons. So that's going to be really fun. We're going to get together on a Friday or Saturday night. We're all going to bring up the movie and push play at the same time. And then we're just going to watch it together. And then, you know, all be on the same live stream and just talk about it, shoot the breeze, discuss characters, you know, watching it in real time. We decided on a movie, but I kind of want to change the movie. So I'm going to go back to the patrons and see. We were going to be watching Pirates of the Caribbean, but I kind of on the flip side, maybe want to watch The Parent Trap, the Lindsay Lohan one. So I don't know. I'll give that out to the patrons and they ultimately will decide which one. Those are two totally different things. Hey, maybe we'll do both. We'll do Pirates of the Caribbean. Then the next month we can do The Parent Trap and I can get my Parent Trap fix. Both are so good. So it's going to be super fun. I'm really excited to do that basically in a week or two with the patrons. So thank you so much, Esther. This is a blast. And, you know, the theory, there wasn't a lot of meat to the bone, but it was fun discussing and going back and kind of talking about these different films. If anything, it makes me want to go back and watch Corpse Bride again, which is definitely a forgotten gem, I think.
So I just wanted to mention a couple of, so we had Josella, she came on and mentioned as far as different Halloween movies, she was like Coraline and Corpse Bride are movies that she would show people, as well as Don't Look Under the Bed, Disney Channel film, too scary for little kids though. So I was like, oh, okay. Nice. I have not seen that one. And then we had Ryan Campbell from the chat where he threw in that it's a great theory. However, if Jack had been alive as Victor, I wonder why he didn't remember Christmas. I guess he could argue that when you die, you might lose your memories from life, or perhaps the memories fade the longer you've been dead. An interesting theory though, for sure. And then Kurt also comes in and says, totally legit. Tim Burton would totally do this to us. So
that's awesome.
Thank you to the patrons for joining us and Esther for jumping on today. It was very last minute when I put out the notice that we were doing this because I was like, okay, we got to, Morgan is going out of town. So we weren't able to do a movie review this week. And, but we will be jumping back into the zone later on as she gets back
into the unknown.
And Morgan, you're gonna go to Disney World.
I am, for the spooky season. All the Halloween decorations will be there. So next episode I'll report back, a newbie at Disney World. I've been to Disney Tokyo Disneyland, Tokyo Disney Seas, obviously Disneyland and California Adventure, but I've never been to the Mac Daddy Disney World. So I will report back. I'm really excited. With that, I need to go get some shut eye so I can relax, get ready, and because we're going to be going. There's not going to be a lot of resting. This isn't going to be, it's like a vacation, but a vacation where you're constantly just going. You go back to your hotel room, sleep. Yeah, sleep for 6 weeks.
Not a vacation.
I wish. 6 hours. And then back to the next park again. Yeah, so it's a trip. You know, and I do say, before we go, I've always said a trip is when you have your kids. A vacation is when you don't have your kids. But this is kind of a hybrid thing. A vacation to me is when you're just like truly relaxing. But who knows?
Right.
I'll let you know how it goes. Maybe it will end up being the true vacation that is so desirable. So with that, thank you so much. Thanks to the patrons. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to rotoscopers.com/patron. You can see all the different tiers that we have. We have different levels for whatever works for you. And of course, one of the cool things about being a patron is you get to do cool things like this. So thank you, Esther, for joining us. This was super fun. And with that, until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
Hello.
Go for it.
Back up again. You're gonna have to cut this out. Blah, blah. Rewind, reverse. Okay, thank you.
It always never works. We fix it in post.
Always cool. Never.
That was
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Awesome.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.